Jonathan Baker is a producer, writer, and director. Jonathan Baker the man is also striving to be Jonathan Baker the brand. In addition to being a filmmaker, Jonathan also owns the Maidstone Hotel in the Hamptons, and he has his own aromatherapy product line, Jonathan Baker, established 1962. Jonathan grew up in New York City in the 1960s, and his love for movies started at an early age while he was running around the streets of Manhattan learning how to make his own films. He would eventually end up coming to Hollywood, and his fascinating journey towards becoming a filmmaker would take him to the Playboy Mansion, playing poker games with famous celebrities, and even owning Warren Beatty's house. Jonathan's motto is, "Life is by design," and even in the afterlife, Jonathan's made some very specific plans. But for now, in the world of the living, Jonathan isn't done striving to become an icon. I'm Bobby Gonzalez, and this is Spoken Dreams.
My name is Jonathan Baker. I'm a producer, writer, director. I also aspire to be kind of a brand. I grew up in New York City, Manhattan, circa 1960s. It was an interesting time. Things were hustling and bustling and weren't as sophisticated as they were today, but they were trying, where movie stars were really movie stars. Paul Newman, Robert Redford, these were my movie stars, Steve McQueen. So I would go to the movies with my mother, who was an actress herself. Not so sure she was that successful, but she gave it a good try. She went to a lot of acting classes, so I sat on a lot of acting class stages, Stella Adler being one of them, prime New York City coach, Lee Strasberg. So growing up with all the acting coaches and watching my mother and then watching her kind of want to be in production as well. Look, being in the movie business is like being in love. You have to be in love. You have to have this tingly feeling about wanting to get somewhere that you don't know where to go. It's the same thing about wanting to meet the girl that's so beautiful and not knowing how or what's going to happen when you try to go after her. Same exact emotion, at least for me, right? And so as I was watching the acting classes and the productions, and New York City had its own world of movie making. So there was California, and then there was New York. And as I roamed the streets of New York at a very young age, everything was about going to the movies. It was always about the movies because my mother loved it. And the things that I logged were movies that told stories about destinations. And James Bond was a big deal for me. Buddy cop movies were a big deal for me. Big budgeted movies back then that took me globally with huge backdrops. So as I grew up in New York and I was going to the movies and just falling in love and kind of having my own difficulties because I came from a single household, I started to make movies. But I really never understood the art of making movies, much later on in life. Back then, I would have the camera, I would do montages, I would tell clips of stories that were about things that I would watch on television, you know, the $6 Million Man, how he would pop through a building. So I would set the camera up and have my sister run to the building and then stop, and then I'd have her go on the other side and we'd start it up again. I put it together and go, oh, that's how you do it. Today it's special effects. And so I did this on the rooftops of New York City to the streets. And I would go through all the garbage of all the streets and find things and use them as props. I mean, there were books and there were wallets and hats and costumes. I mean, my grandfather used to say, you could live on selling the junk in New York City. And I didn't realize what he was saying until much later on in life. Remember, this is pre-computers. The Partridge Family was on the air. The Brady Bunch was on the air. I was a kid trying to understand my place and also tell my own story. I wanted to do something, and I didn't know what to do. And my mother used to always say, listen, I've acted, I've produced, kind of, and I want you to do business. So everything then was about, what are you going to do? And it started really young, and it freaked me out, because a kid at 6 years old and a kid at 13-year-old in New York City is really got the brain of a 21-year-old and a 26-year-old. So at a very young age, she would say to me, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I'd be like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I want to be in the movie business. She's like, great. Go to school. Get a job. I'm like, no, I don't want to go to school and get a job. I want to make movies, and I'm happy to go to school, make movies. But every time I would take a turn, she would be telling me, at that point, I want you to go and do business. And so when I finally got through being educated, I was still making movies, and I thought about not going back to college, but that wasn't in the cards for me because I didn't want to scrap my way up. I wanted to understand it. And so I came to California and I went to USC and I learned the craft of making movies. And, you know, along the way, I wound up meeting a guy who was making movies, and he was making low budget movies by the name of Billy Fine. And he discovered Sharon Stone. And he took me under his wing, and I learned everything I didn't want to learn about film. He was a partier, he had the women, he made bad movies, there was content, he was connected to the Jerry Gross Organization, which is a distributor. The process wasn't fun. And so I went back to New York because I hated working in that environment so much. So I went to work on Wall Street. My mother had always said, if you want to make movies and be the boss, you have to come in from the other side. And so I went back to New York. I got my Series 7. I got my Series 3. One was in commodities. One was in Wall Street. Went to Wall Street, and it was a little stuffy for me. And I said, I don't want to do this. And my mother was like, hey, why don't you go and take your license and go trade commodities, and you know how to gamble so well. So I went over to commodities market and started trading gold and coin, you know, for a company. But again, my eye wandered. I didn't want to be there. I'm like, this isn't fun. I want to be creative. I want the California dream. What is the California dream? Exactly what it states. You have to have a dream in order to get there. You have to follow footprints that's in your head. You have to not be a pulse and a heartbeat. And so I, at that point, decided that New York wasn't going to work for me. So I went back to California. And at that time, Jane Fonda Video came out. And it broke through a market that didn't exist. Called the home video market, literally, single-handedly made the market. And at that point in time, I saw the opportunity, and I tried to create my way into the business. Wanted to make movies, but I wasn't there yet to make movies. I wanted to be creative, tell stories. And the light went on one day, the Van Pattens. They were my family on the West Coast. Dick Van Patten from Eight Is Enough. Vince Van Patten, who was a famous child actor. I mean, he was a real star who became a tennis player And then there's Jimmy, who's the actor, and he'd done like 30 movies. And Nels was a world-class paddle tennis and tennis player. And as I saw this home video market, I'm like, Dick, can you do me a favor and do a show for me? Sure, Jonathan, what do you want me to do? I want you to do a show called Dirty Tennis. And he loved it. It was all about how to play tennis dirty. Not pornographically dirty. Dirty. Dirty tricks, slices. You know, run people around, beat them. And because he had a comedic timing to him, he loved it. So I went out and I sold the show to Universal. It was the Van Pattens, and I got Nicolette Sheridan to play the blonde, kind of the blonde bimbo, and then Bruce Jenner, who is now Caitlyn Jenner. And, you know, it was a good, earnest effort of making this film, producing it, writing it, directing some of it. I mean, I had a co-director at the time. Universal was there, and... you know, we won a lot of awards. It went on to cable television and Tennis Channel. And I had arrived at making something and becoming the beginning of me. Baker Entertainment Group started on that moment. Jonathan Baker started on that moment. And boy, I had to fight for everything. No one ever gave me anything. But you have to have passion, you have to have drive, and you have to go someplace that will take you someplace else. As these home video world was happening, I started, I was playing poker. And Vince took me to Robert Evans' house, one of my idols, Godfather, Chinatown. I mean, they're a legend. This is a legend. And I'm sitting playing poker at Robert Evans' house, and he goes, "Hey, kid, what are you working on?" And I said, "I want to produce movies." And he goes, "What do you own?" And I'll never forget it. He looked at me, and I said, "I don't own anything." He looked at me, one of those aha moments, and he said, "Here's the deal. You either own it or you write it. You either buy an option and you control it, or you write it. And there's nothing in between, where they will take it away from you and they will use you. And you will never get what you want." Well, you can imagine what my brain was doing at that point. I'm like, that's it, I'm done. I'm you know, I've had that moment with Robert Evans and with Warren Beatty, just so you know. But Warren Beatty didn't come for 20 years later. And him telling me that I need to be a director. So, what did I do? I started, I went to Samuel French Bookstore, which is the greatest bookstore for movies on the planet. I started reading all of the writing books, and I wrote my first movie. Then I wrote another movie called Controlling Interest. Through these things, the writer's strike came. The writer's strike happened. Home video was over. And so I decided to forge my way into the spa business. Didn't know anything about it. You never know why things happen. Things happen in such strange ways, and you don't know until you look back on it 5 years later, 10 years later, before it makes sense. But I was one of the first 50 spas in America in 1995. There was nothing, no spa, no nothing, no massages. So I started a brand called Skin Spa in LA. Became very, very successful. Did satellites in New York and London, and created a product called 1962. So the writer's strike happened, the spa appeared, the product became very successful in 1962. I was writing movies, and I was pretty successful at the spa business. I just didn't like babysitting that world. It became infantile compared to, you know, being in the entertainment business, which was a army of seas of people that you just couldn't put your hand on. So I was writing from my house, and I was running the spa, and I didn't want to be in the seedy world of California, but in the same breath, I was always in love with Playboy. I was in love with the idea of that life, brand integration, being somebody that lived the brand. You know, quite frankly, I wanted to be not Hugh Hefner in terms of the Playboy. I wanted to be Hugh Hefner, the entrepreneur. He was great. He had movies. He had women. He had a mansion. He had beautiful people. He was doing amazing things. And I didn't have a father. So if I was going to pick somebody that to emulate, he was one of them. Got one foot into the Playboy mansion because I know a lot of people up there and having a lot of fun. And I was at the Playboy mansion a lot. Really good friends with Hugh Hefner. And I played cards with Hef every Wednesday. And I would go up there on Saturday and Sunday for movie night and fun in the sun. So I had it pretty good. And I was learning a lot from him. I was understanding what branding was. I was understanding what Lucky was. I at one point asked him, come on, did you just do this? Did you sign a deal with the devil? How the f*** did you make this happen? And he looked at me and he flipped a coin and he said, look, I changed the company name from Stag Party to Playboy. And that was the end of it. And so I learned how to make luck happen. And, you know, I really enjoyed that world up there for a very long time. And this went on. I was writing movies, doing the spa, and kind of hanging out for a lot of years now. And in the middle of all this, Playboy gave me a franchise with my ex-wife to do art, Playboy art, and she was an artist. And I really used it to hone my managing business skills. And it was quite successful for a short period of time. But again, it wasn't what I wanted. And I'm writing movies. And I got married. And on my honeymoon, I woke up induced by who knows what. And it came up with this idea for a movie, which is I've been working on ever since, called Icon. And I rolled out of bed, and I'm like, oh, my God, I have it. I have the answer. It was like being struck by lightning. And I wrote this movie, and I love this movie, and it's semi-autobiographical. You know, I've been working on this movie. Again, we're going back to tenacity. I've been working on this movie since 2001. I haven't given up. I've written many, many different drafts. It was a huge, huge project, a lot of characters. I'll make it one day. So that movie was born in 2001. As I was making that movie, I created another movie called Fate. 2005, I started writing that movie. Skin Spa's still around, and my life starts to unwind. At that point, I wound up getting a divorce, living at the Playboy Mansion, still, kind of, and really writing my movies, and I was kind of getting rid of Skin Spa at that point. So I was selling Skin Spa in 2010, kept the brand stuff. I was started to think about, you know, who I really am. And, you know, so Hugh Hefner, really important person to me, is connected to Marilyn Monroe that he never met. Never met Marilyn, but he's buried next to Marilyn today, Westwood Cemetery. And above Marilyn's plot, because I got a crazy thing when I found out that he was going to be buried there. He kind of pissed off at me for doing this, but, you know, I learned from the best. So I went out in a decade ago, maybe 15 years ago, and I bought the crypt above Hugh Hefner because I knew where he was going to go, and it had an empty, you know, you just bought it 20 years ago. You knew he wanted to be dead next to Marilyn Monroe because she made his magazine. And I thought, well, I want to be dead next to both of you. So I put my name on the grave, and it says, Jonathan Baker, 1962, to stay tuned. And it's there today. And I never changed it, and I'm never going to change it because it makes me immortal. So am I dead or am I alive? A lot of people have thought it was really interesting, a little creepy. I thought it was an interesting way to look at yourself because my motto is life is by design. So I kind of believe that everything I've been telling you is the path of me becoming me. What I haven't told you is that I had one girlfriend that destroyed my life and I was miserable for 8 months. I had a marriage that broke up. I was completely lifeless and didn't understand anything. I sold Skin Spy, I had nothing, and I had a little bit of money and didn't know what to do or what I wanted. And so I redesigned my life. And at that moment, I said, life is by design. It became my moment of clarity. And so everything was about design at that point, who I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, and how I was going to take everybody that I met, the Van Pattens, Robert Evans, all these people, Hugh Hefner, and learn and place them in there and start to build something. So it's mindset. What you want and what you get and what you do and where you go and what's happening in life is a mindset. I resurrected at that point like the phoenix. You have to burn to be reborn. And I was going to reborn myself with the same conviction, with better knowledge and better understanding, and thank God for Hugh Hefner's branding ability. At that point, still writing the movies, and I had gone back to New York, and I connected with a bank to give me a fund to help me make my movies. And I was living in New York, going back and forth as a single father from here. And I was trying to produce, and I was trying to build the brand and build myself and understand what I wanted. And at the same breath, I was looking for a place to live, and I couldn't find a place. Boy, was I looking for a place to live. Could not find anything. Found this one house that was off market, on market, off market, and it happened to be Warren Beatty's house. So I wound up calling my broker and saying, this property is coming on the market. As soon as it comes on market, get me in there. Lo and behold, 4 days later, call came, property's on the market, let's go. I walked in there. I said, holy shit, this is unbelievable. And I said, I'll take it. The broker said, what? I said, I'll take it with nothing. I don't want to do any surveys, I don't want to do anything, I'll take it. And so the broker thought he was getting punked. And so the next day they call me and they tell me, Warren wants to see you. I'm like, Warren wants to see me. Okay, this is great. Warren Beatty wants to see me? He's my idol. So I got in my car, took my kid, we went up there. And we sat at the table. Before we got in, there were lawyers, salespeople, everybody. And they were like, Jonathan, he's going to talk the whole time. Don't say anything. And I looked at them and I was like, listen to me. You think I'm here because I want to buy a house? This has nothing to do with a house. This is Warren Beatty. I am here to talk about Hollywood. My movies and everything that surrounds it. And we went in there, and one by one, all the brokers and all the lawyers left, and it was just me and Warren. And literally, 4 hours later, he didn't get a chance to talk. So I had now Warren wanting to sell me the house, but so curious about who the fuck I was. And we became really good friends. And I wanted him to be part of my movies, and he would tell me about how he won his movies, and I would got the greatest education in a 2-week period over a month. that you can imagine. And then it was buying the house, which, by the way, I did buy the house. I sat with him one afternoon, and he made me tell him the story of iCoin from beginning to end. And at the end of that, he said, "Jonathan, I've never had anybody do that before. And if you can do that, then you need to direct. And if you don't direct, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life." Another aha moment like Robert Evans. You must direct. Okay, so I must produce. I must own the property. I must direct. So I started my project Becoming Iconic. And that, I started to throw darts out into the world to try to get interviews with some of the top people out there. So what I wound up with was Jodie Foster, Adrian Lyne, Taylor Hackford, Nick Cage, and Faye Dunaway, all telling me their stories about directing and their first time on the set and what had happened to them. And each one of them had a different story and different anecdote, and everybody was fascinating to me, and they're all on camera. So you have all of these famous directors and actors telling me their story. And through the middle, I had gone to Lionsgate with my fund and my films, and I'd asked them to make my movies, and they had said, "If you make one of ours, we'll make one of yours." And Inconceivable showed up. It's a movie about in vitro. It's got Nick Cage, Faye Dunaway, Nikki Whelan. And so if you watch Becoming Iconic, you see all these directors giving me advice. You see me and my challenges with Lionsgate as directing a studio movie, and how I overcame the trials and tribulations. So Inconceivable gets released in June, 2 years ago. Becoming Iconic was the beginning of the year. I'm trying to cast the next movie, Fate, which I had written 2009. Icon still sitting out there from 2001. And I haven't given up. I refuse right now to do other people's movies at this moment in time because I want to make the commitment to myself, which talks about tenacity, which is I will do Fate and Icon before I do anything else, or I'm going to die trying. And we already know where I'm going to die. Because life is by design, I believe I've gotten everything I've ever wanted, and if I die tomorrow, even if I don't do Icon and Fate, I'm still complete because I told the story of Fate and Icon, and they're amazing. For me, the future is, what will I do if I really got to make Fate and Icon? What would happen when that door closes at 100% of everything I ever wanted in this world? And I got everything I want. I'm happy. I got a beautiful wife. I've got three amazing children. I get to live my life any way I want and dream it any way I can. You have to burn like shedding skin in order to rise as the phoenix. And this journey, this life that we have, we only have one of. If you don't dream really big, you won't get half of it. Maybe at the end of the day, what I just explained in my journey can help you in your journey. And that is what life is all about.
That was Jonathan Baker. You can find more info on his films, his hotel, his product line, all on our website, ktla.com/spokendreams. Or you can go see Jonathan yourself. He's in the Westwood Cemetery, right above Hugh Hefner and Marilyn Monroe. If you want to follow along with me, I'm on Instagram at SoundsLikeBobby, and you can keep up with the podcast on Instagram at Twitter at SpokenDreamsPod. Thanks to those of you who are subscribed to Spoken Dreams. If you like this story or any of our 80-plus stories, maybe leave a nice comment or review. That's all for this week. Until next time, break a leg.